Get ready for the Ocelli effect.
Alternative.
Chuck
Ocelli. 21st day of April 2016, and we are live once again here on the Ocelli Effect. I'm your host, Chuck Ocelli. We are broadcasting on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Despite the rumors and speculations, I assure you I did not take 420 off as a personal holiday, though probably should have. Nope, it was a technical issue that kept me from the air last night. I actually planned on bringing on Mitch Santel, and I was going to have a frank discussion with him about the music business and the radio business. Since I have actually participated in both of these things, I really wanted to have that discussion with him, and it was going to go into a couple of other directions. Stay tuned. I think we'll be able to do that next week. Tell you what else I think we're going to do next week is on this very show. Okay, which is not a third world hellhole with a first world resort, by the way, just so you know. Interesting phrase that was thrown at me just before I came to air, and I just found it so funny, I thought I'd share it with you. Anyway, here's the deal. We're going to actually probably try and rope Casey Gain into coming on here, who has been on Opperman's show, but I think it would be fascinating to have a discussion about intelligence operations in particular areas of the world, well, with two people who have taken time to study the character, nature, posture, and after all the resulting records of many intelligence agencies, and that would be Carmine and myself, I think it would be a fascinating discussion. So I think we'll do that. But, yeah, the music show will be coming up next week, I think, if all things hold up. I don't have any technical issues, and the network remains on the air. I'll be there. Anyway, it's Thursday night, and, yes, we have restarted doing the Sinister History section with Carmine, which, by the way, people were a little mad at me, Carmine, and thought that somehow I had just decided not to bring Carmine on the air, like I was just kind of dumping you there. That's not what happened.
No, it was stuff outside of your control. I don't blame you for it. You can't be held accountable for technological issues.
Well, there's that. And then there was also, you know, you needed a little break because you had some work you were doing. I mean, it was something where we mutually said, you know what, we'll let this go briefly and we'll come back to it. That's all it was.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to see that people are interested in what we have to say, you know, and talking about some of the issues that we discuss. I appreciate it, and I hope they all enjoy themselves listening tonight.
Right. Now, this one's going to be a little bit different. You know, I say that all the time, don't I? It's going to be a little bit different, you know, because I try and do this differently every single time. I mean, yes, yeah, some things seem to remain the same, but I definitely change the tune, so it ain't a Zeppelin song. Rip-off artists. Anyway.
That's a long discussion right there is what that subject is.
There's a long discussion, yes. And that won't be part of the music show next week, although some people take me to task for that. Like, how dare you? And look, if you clearly rip off certain artists and you play their music and you don't pay them.
Or at least credit them.
Or crediting them would be the minimum you'd expect. But also, yeah, you can't pay a guy who's been dead 50 years. I understand that. But anyway, putting it all aside, Carmine, this is not the subject matter for tonight. And I'm trying to have fun with this. I really am. You know, we have to have some fun now and then, don't we?
Yeah. Well, and they are rather, you know, heavy topics at times that we discuss. So, you know, I hope people don't understand that it's not – we're not denigrating anything that we're discussing. We're just – it's gallows humor. You know, it's trying to find – it's the way that some of us deal with, you know, really dark topics. Well, you know, yeah. Rather than just sit there and be disturbed by them and not say anything, we might throw a joke or, you know, just try to lighten the mood a little bit so that the conversation can proceed.
Well, that's the thing. You know, a slightly sardonic sense of humor can often be the thing that preserves your sanity when you're taking a look at some of the darkest aspects of what it is people engage in order to control others. You know, you see political assassinations. I mean, let's not forget, this is not just merely an academic discussion. This is the murder of another human being. And for what purpose? Well, usually to usurp power or to cease one own march toward power, so it's often a power struggle or a popularity struggle, one or the other, which also happens to bring along with it some level of power. So power struggles costing human lives is a very serious subject, certainly. But you know, when you take a look at the many individuals who have been snuffed out under the guise of preserving this, that, or the third thing over the years, I mean, hey, studying World War II, you know, is a pretty rough topic. Studying the First World War, studying any of the wars, actually, you know, you find atrocities, you find really racist kind of things that happen, very bigoted things, people who were destroyed for no other reason than what their alleged identity was, and this kind of thing, you know, it continuously occurs. And, you know, quite honestly, I see it today still. You know, I'm very sure that let's just go on to current events real quickly, because we are still engaged in warfare in the Middle East. I guarantee you not every single casualty is somebody who was spoiling to fight with American troops, was spoiling to fight with the coalition, was spoiling to – no, there's plenty of collateral damage. This is real things that happen, and when we study these subjects, you know, again, if you internalize all of that reality, occasionally a touch of gallows humor I think is absolutely appropriate just to keep ourselves sane as we go forward with it, you know. Of course, today in mainstream news – which I did finally, yes, re-engage in the news cycle just a little bit, right on time, though, to be inundated with people explaining exactly what type of a musical genius Prince was, which, here's a big shocker for some people, I guarantee you, I agree he was a musical genius, and I agree that he's a loss to the art form. Now, that sounds kind of strange considering the guy who spent, you know, more than an hour talking about Lemmy Kilmister on his show. But guess what? I see the value of the artistry, and I see many different genres of music as valid forms of expression. And you know what? Some people just have a very special way of presenting it, and, you know, Prince was one of those guys. So more on that later, too. Look, I've gone all around the world here in subjects, Carmine, right?
I'm just letting you go.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Because a lot of times I do interviews, and I go right into a subject, and I don't say much. And it's funny, though, because people still criticize me for talking too much. But, what can you do?
So, there's going to be someone that doesn't like what you have to say, no matter what you say, whether it's perfect or not. So,
absolutely true. Hey, yeah. what kind of feedback have you gotten on the past few shows that we've done? By the way,
I've gotten, it's all been largely good. I haven't gotten any of the guy telling me what that one gentleman was saying to you on YouTube.
Oh wait, which one?
Well, it was the one that you posted about, or was that not on YouTube? Was that sent to you personally? Where. No. The 30 seconds or 60 seconds, he said?
Oh, no. That guy actually went to my personal website.
Wow.
And posted that in the comments section where I was, you know, this completely – well, let's put it this way. I don't even want to read it or anything to you. But
yeah, no.
For the listener's sake, though, it ended with this, that essentially he felt as though I was a great inspiration for him to commit suicide after listening to my show. Yeah. I never had a criticism. I mean, is that fair, Carmine? That's basically what he said.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, I would say, yeah, that might be the most, you know, hyperbolic way to state it. But yeah, I'd go along with that.
It's not inaccurate, though, is it?
No, it's not inaccurate.
And I had to share it with the people in the Facebook group because I just was quite moved. I never saw a criticism like that for another radio host that said, I want to kill myself when I listen to you. I said, okay, well.
That's why I told you to say next time, if he ever contacts you again, to tell him if he doesn't like the show that he would really not like Ocelli.com, so you can at least get a plug in.
But see, that's the funny
part. Serves some sort of purpose.
He's already on, but he already went to the trouble of going to my website.
I guarantee, most likely he's still listening.
So I hope you are still listening, and no matter whether you have crossed over to the other side or not. Hopefully, wouldn't it be great if they got this radio show like on the other side, if you will? But look, you're an atheist, so.
Yeah, I think that there's enough things in science that we have yet to explain before people start getting into grander ideas. That I'm a very heavy evidence guy, so.
Really, you don't have to go more than 20 feet outside of your own reach in this world to find stuff you can't explain. So good luck. It is what it is. And, you know, and here's the great thing. I know you're open-minded. If one day evidence is presented to you.
Well, then, yeah, there's nothing I can do about it. I think a lot of times, you know, people think that sometimes I might use evidence always or attempt to at least have some substantial evidence is not because – you know, I just feel as though you have to. You have to give way to what the facts are. If you don't give way to what the facts are, you're lying to yourself, and then you're not going to have any sort of rational idea about the state of things.
Well, right. And you know what? Speaking of having a rational idea about the state of things, let's begin to get into the topic for tonight. And who knows? We'll probably stray away from it again because I'm in just that kind of strange mood. And, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, Carmine, let's have a little fun, too, while we impart some information. That's the way I see it. So,
some of the information we've discussed prior. Hopefully, though, those that are just coming into it new will, you know, get – it won't be the exact – you know, we're not going to go over the exact same things, but it's basically similar instances are going to be pointed to. We were going to talk about logistics of assassination tonight. When Chuck releases it, or you can go to Ocelli.com. I believe right now it's in the member section. We did a prior conversation where we talked about possible suspects. Tonight we're going to cover, you know, what it would take to actually get it done.
Right. And these possible suspects, by the way, just as a quick spoiler alert, do not include LBJ or
– No, it includes – yeah. I use evidence.
Yeah. Actually, there's evidence. There's evidence attached to it. So it's not some boogeyman. It's not Malcolm Wallace. It's not LBJ. No, there's actually people that might have had means, motive, and opportunity, which we discussed many, many times during that discussion. And kind of reasonable to do it with three different subjects on there. So, yeah, if you go to Ocelli.com and you're in the members section, you can catch that right now, and it will be further released elsewhere. But for now.
Yeah. As far as logistics, well, I think that, you know, it is largely incumbent upon – what flavor of plot we are discussing, you know, because in my book, I tried to keep it open to multiple, you know, because there's lots of feasible scenarios that could be drawn from a few reasonable suspects and that have the motive, means, and opportunity. So there are, you know, I think there are a lot of possible scenarios that aren't out of the realm of possibility, but there's also scenarios, for instance, in tonight's discussion, I don't think that we're going to need to discuss any large group doing this because I don't think a large group could have gotten away with it.
No, we're not. And I'll tell you what else. In the very same day, by the way, I wasn't able to pick up on a lot of my messages in the past couple of days, but as I was catching up with them today, guess what I got? A message from another radio host whose name I'm not going to mention to protect to protect the mistake he made. You know, this guy sends me a link to JFK to 9/11, a rich man's game or whatever.
Ugh.
And
apparently he didn't listen to that show.
No, I guess he did not. I guess he did not. I think I'm going to have to send him this one and show him what the other side of that looks like. Now, look, I only bring this thing up as something to avoid when it comes to the Kennedy assassination, which to me begins with, you know, giant leaps of faith to begin to get into the logistics of the assassination. And then there are many other smaller leaps of faith which must be made from there. And you have to make, you know, plenty of guilt by association sort of statements as opposed to, you know, here's the thing. You can have neighbors all around you that are participating in criminal activities, and if you're not privy, you're not privy, and they might be a stone's throw from your front step, you know? And this is the thing that's lost on these people. They don't make a connection by saying, you know, this person was meeting with this person. This person was in business with this person. They just put a proximity on it and say, well, you know, since this person was in the government at the same time, you know, it's very weird to watch that happen. Now, when we discuss logistics, let's break that down real quick, Carmine. What do we mean by discussing logistics in the JFK assassination area or in general?
Well, I would say that it would be defined as discussing what the exact details are of an operation, whether it's an intelligence operation, a military operation, whether it's a paramilitary operation done by people outside of official circles. It'd be breaking down everything it would take to actually undertake the assassination and pull off a getaway.
I mean, and this is basically explaining how this is supposed to work. All the nuts and bolts, okay? Not just saying, look, a guy robbed a bank and got away, but saying that he would have to rob a bank by arriving at this particular time, you know, departing by this particular time, utilizing this particular strong arm method, actually, let's just say, handing the teller a note or not handing a note, making a verbal announcement, and then how did he get away? Was it on a bike? Was it, you know, on a, which I actually knew a guy who robbed a bank and got away on a bicycle.
But, wow.
Yeah, that's a strange story in and of itself. Too funny. For a couple of days, they chased him. Anyway, you know, what type of vehicle they got away in, how many accomplices were there, was there a wheelman waiting? You know, these are all the details in reconstructing, okay, an activity. You can figure these things out. Now, logistical concerns come into play for various types of operations, not just criminal operations, but military operations, which may not be mutually exclusive. Sometimes military operations are criminal, but let's assume for the moment that they're not. If you're taking a look at how it is a military is going to say, oh, I don't know, put boots on the ground in a particular nation, here's the thing. You have to decide what it is they'll require for support, what type of equipment they're going to need. That'll have to be assigned, transferred, manufactured, whatever it takes to bring it to fruition and put it in proximity of a prescribed number of troops. Those troops should have a skill set, etc., etc. When you do all of that, then you decide where to put them, where to place them. They are brought there, and then they're supposed to have a plan of action to get themselves into the nation or into a target area where they begin operations. Now, those would be similar to the logistical concerns in general of what a military operation would do. Anything out of line here so far, Carmine, what I'm saying?
No, I'd agree with that.
Okay. So now, when we consider that there would be an illegal operation but may be similar to a military operation in some aspects, like an assassination, you would have to concern yourself with what type of, well, access to the target, I would believe, would be the first thing, but in no particular order, let's go with it. Access to the target. You know, choosing the target actually, but then access to the target, you would have to provide the mechanism by which the assassination would be conducted. You would have to place someone who is capable of doing such a thing in the right place at the right time with the right equipment, okay? Then you may or may not, because we did read the assassination guide on this show, sometimes you would allow that assassin to be sacrificed, sometimes you would not. It depends on the situation. But either way, these have logistical concerns. If they're a sacrifice, you may want to assure that they're going to be sacrificed. So you would place them in such a way that they would have to be gunned down immediately, taken into custody immediately by people that were under your control, whatever. All of these things are sound considerations when you're sitting there at the drawing board of planning an assassination. And I say again, if you don't believe what I'm saying, I'm pretty sure it was very specifically explained in the assassination guide, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the documents that I have tonight. One of the links is a study of assassination that the CIA conducted in 1954. And it goes fairly thoroughly into the details and circumstances for best assassinating someone in various methods, whether it's your bare hands, to a gun, to a rifle, to a rock.
Right. Now, what I just said beforehand is the very general sense of it, and you would say this is a logical and common sense sort of approach. But here's the deal. They actually laid this thing out as a manual for people to follow. And so let's begin there. Because what were they talking about in this particular document?
Well, in the it's a study of assassination, and they were talking about – they begin, of course, with the history of it, and then they move on to it's an extreme measure not normally used in clandestine operations. It'll assume that it'll never be ordered by any U.S. headquarters. The latter may, in rare instances, allow its execution to be done by Associated Foreign Service.
Mm.
So the guide itself, it goes into, as you and I know from having read over it, you can kill somebody by drowning, you can kill them by a fall from a high area, you can kill them and make it look as though they had taken their own life. If they're an alcoholic, you can inject them with poison that will have similar effects of acute alcoholism, and that'll be the ending death result at the time. That's what the coroner would have ruled it.
Right. Now, one of my favorite footnotes from the very – I think it's the third section is under justification. I really like that one. Would you want to just read a portion of it for people real quick?
Oh, sure, sure.
Okay, because I think I have it pulled up now. Yes, I do. Okay, ready for this one. This is under the heading justification. Murder is not morally justifiable.
Period.
Period. Now, there's a sentence after that. Self-defense may be argued if the victim has knowledge which may destroy the resistance organization if divulged. Okay. Assassination of persons responsible for atrocities or reprisals may be regarded as just punishment. Killing a political leader whose burgeoning career is a clear and present danger to the cause of freedom may be held necessary. I'm not kidding. This is what it actually says. Okay, one last part. But assassination can seldom be employed with a clear conscience. Persons who are morally squeamish should not attempt it. Period. Now, how can you not have a little bit of gallows humor about that? Listen, if you have a problem with murder, assassination may not be for you.
Exactly. It's almost like they're selling it in the commercial.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I had to go into that. And then, of course, after that, like you were saying, they go into different techniques and all of that kind of stuff. But I do love also how they break down for us the assassin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's definitely similarities, I think, between when discussing the Kennedy and King and Robert Kennedy's case with some of the tenets laid down in here, which is why I'm willing to say that, I think a lot of people want to, as we started with, no large organizations, and that rules out the entire FBI, that rules out the entire CIA, that rules out the entire Secret Service, that rules out any whole organization because there's no way you're going to keep that secret.
Well,
and
exactly.
It also should make us consider that it maybe wasn't an official organization. It could have been ex-members of an organization. It could have been a rogue member of an organization. It could have been someone saying they were a member of that organization just to confuse others, just a criminal doing that.
Well, and that's another interesting thing that comes up is, simply because somebody says they're in the CIA or they're in the whatever –
doesn't we know mean that, that doesn't make are. It true. Exactly.
You know, oftentimes there are people masquerading as individuals who are involved with particular organizations and things. And we do discover them now and then, because they don't have the proper identification. They don't have, you know, certain clearances, things like that, but they get pretty far in some of these instances that seem to occur. Quite often, many agencies won't report on it because they get a little embarrassed. I mean, we all remember the Secret Service getting extremely upset when people that were not vetted, you know, got within feet of the president a few years ago. If you think that's the first time that happened, folks, you're wrong. And the FBI, especially while Hoover was alive, was certainly not really happy with ever admitting that they dropped the ball or missed out on something that they should have known about, being the deepest investigation unit for domestic policing on a national scale. They should have known everything was the legend, you know. And when they missed things, which they did in the Kennedy assassination, you know, the whole thing with James Hostie, which, look, there's a lot of different possibilities there. I'm not saying just read, you know, Hostie's book and take it verbatim that that his side of the story was the correct side of the story. But here's the thing. If only a small portion of what Hostie had said before his death was true, we have an FBI that was really in CYA mode over the Kennedy assassination for sure, and that's just based on his account, and he was the guy who was supposed to be talking to Oswald. So here's the fun part. Even if you assume that Oswald is your lone shooter, you still have agencies that had a few miscues here that weren't readily jumping and saying, we messed up, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why when I've talked to people about the subject, I like to say that there definitely were cover-ups.
Right.
The conspiracy has yet to be definitively proven. Exactly why the conspiracy occurred is the discussion. But the cover-ups happened. We can verify that with substantial evidence that Hoover lied repeatedly, that in private Hoover admitted they had no jurisdiction, that the FBI had received a call the night before Oswald was murdered saying that there was a committee of people that were going to kill him.
Yeah, right. And also they, Dallas police received a similar call apparently. Yeah. And, yeah.
And Hoover warned them multiple times to secure Oswald and to not let the press be there, and they still let it go forward. You know, and people unfortunately try to pin it to a nefarious when it's rather just incompetence.
Mm.
That, you know, they wanted the press to be there, and apparently they wanted to be shown leading, you know, the villain to jail.
And this this really, really foolish argument I've heard about, well, they had to show people that he wasn't being beaten in custody and this kind of thing. First of all, public sentiment, I don't think they would have cared if he was being beaten in custody at the time. And secondly, it – just, I don't know, out of my imagination, just right here and now, I could say, well, if they had invited a couple of local reporters in with their cameras to take fresh pictures of Oswald, they could have escorted them out, and it could have been two, three guys that they exposed him to instead of, you know, these, you know, the midnight press conference and all this other nonsense that went on where the guy was fully exposed to a whole bunch of people, including Jack Ruby on at least three occasions, one of which he shot him. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's the, that would also qualify as part of a conspiracy is what occurred with Oswald and that it was allowed to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether it was incompetence on the part of some or whether it was, you know, I mean, even whether they just wanted him, you know, they weren't acting quite as fast because they were hoping someone would do something like that. You know, I don't think that it's very nefarious. I just think at the time it's human nature that people were relishing what happened to Oswald because I looked over, they had Federal Express messages that were sent to Ruby and he got like 50. And it was just person after person, woman, man, you know, saying that they were so proud of what he had done and he was a great, great American.
Yeah, there were people applauding it, that's for sure. And I remember looking at the live coverage, the live television coverage. I think it was ABC's live coverage, and they just went and asked men on the street about it. And it was like, well, good. You know, and look, public reaction, especially in that case, not unpredictable.
Yeah,
I think it was just fine with the public, and I think they could have mitigated the whole thing by doing like I said, which was to invite somebody in there to basically photograph him or film him without allowing all that exposure. I mean, hey, they could have even figured out a way to probably drag one of those monstrous cameras into closer proximity to him to film him live, just to prove that A, he hadn't been beaten to death, and B, that he was, you know, in fair spirits at the time, which he was. You know, outside of the scuffle and all that, at the movie theater, he actually had not been injured or anything. So I think that would have been the smarter thing to do, but, you know, hindsight, right? Anyway, yeah. But when we go further into the guide, we have the assassin. Now, do you have it in front of you right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, they discuss safe assassinations. They talk about lost assassinations. A safe assassination is one where basically the area is an easier shot. I would assume that distance, you would want to make sure that your agents were in position so that they could easily vanish and escape right after it had happened. With a lost assassination, they're assuming that the assassin will be a fanatic of some sort, and they're assuming that they will be killed. So the assassin isn't to return. Secret assassination can be where you can have an assassin where everyone's attention is diverted elsewhere, and an assassin that no one can see actually commits the crime where they blame someone else for doing it.
Well, yeah, this is all true. I'll tell you what's fascinating to me about the section on the assassin, though, and that is that when they say, you know, firearms and drugs are basically a special equipment, and there should be some good skill level with the assassin, right? Uh-huh. With this specialized equipment that they call it. Okay. Well, since we have RFK, JFK, and MLK all having been killed by firearms, when I take a look at the three alleged lone assassins, I do not find that any of them show great evidence, you know, based on a lot of investigation, of having particularly great skill levels with weapons. Maybe it's just me, and Sirhan might be the exception, because people knew that he actually had gone, you know, to target ranges and things like that, or allegedly. And, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, interesting fact about that is Grant Cooper, his attorney, let slip to the LAPD that he had practiced three times at the range.
Right, right. But I'm just saying that that resembles somebody verifying that he
had
actually –
Yeah, at least he had practiced a little bit. As with the other two, we have no record whatsoever. That's always been one of my big contentions about the problems using Oswald as the assassin, is that he has no appreciable practice for months, perhaps even years, especially with a rifle. In Russia, he could only use a shotgun. The government didn't allow people to have rifles because of the exact thing that happened with President Kennedy.
Right. And the other oddity here is that Oswald, you can't find any evidence of him owning or at any point purchasing at all any ammunition. And now each of the weapons that were allegedly ordered from Klein's came with some ammunition. But, again, that precludes practice. If he utilized the stuff that was shipped to him a year earlier, then you're talking about a year where he didn't even bother to fire the weapons.
And, that's one of the big problems, I think, with the Warren Commission investigation, is they can't ever – they can have him dry firing on the porch in New Orleans, according to Morena, but we know Morena has some problems with her other testimony. But, but if you just focus on that one thing, as some people do, then – the problem is he needs to fire because of the trigger mechanism. It was basically you had to pull the bolt, pull the safety feature, and then fire. And that would take longer. So you had to practice with it to get familiar. So he had that feature to deal with, and he had never practiced that can be verified.
Well, right. That's why I crack up when I see people on YouTube where they're like, I'm going to use a Mannlicher Carcano, and I'm going to fire this thing really quick, and they do it. But they're a well-practiced marksman.
A two-stage pull, I believe is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. And they can do it really quickly. I mean, they really can. And you don't have the argument of the shots are too close together almost with this kind of demonstration, except one problem. The guy who's firing the rifle on YouTube, you know, if you find me somebody who has not picked up one in a year at least, and you hand him that gun, I'll go for it. But that's never the case, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, unfortunately for official claims, Oswald in a lot of areas doesn't have the time for practice. He's busy doing so many things, and he's been observed by so many people that it would be, in my opinion, highly improbable that no one ever saw him practice.
Yeah, without a 24-hour access to some place to shoot and never sleeping, perhaps, maybe. But then his wife might have noticed. But who knows? Okay. Moving on.
Okay, so, you know, you have the assassin, the weapon, which, you know, has a host of problems within itself. And I think people need to know that the weapon, like most things in this case, is not exactly what either side would contend it to be. Officials would largely contend the weapon to be a great weapon, and those who support conspiracy, a lot of people would contend that it was a deficient weapon. It was a decent weapon. It wasn't a good gun. It was a stock, surplus, off-brand weapon. It wasn't anything great, but it wasn't. It could fire, but to do what was done, I think, would require. Now, there were different types of Carcanos, too, which I think makes for an interesting. Here's where we'll possibly speculate a little bit. I found out that there were marksman issues of the Carcano, which were five times as accurate. So that would be a weapon, and it would still keep the ballistics evidence in check.
Unfortunately, that's not what was offered in the Klein's ad that they alleged he got.
Oh, okay. No. I understand, but I'm saying someone who possessed one of those prior
could have
been firing that weapon as a second shooter, and all the ballistics would have just indicated the one weapon still.
That's correct. And the other thing about it is that, you know, they were not all manufactured in Italy. There was another point of manufacture, which escapes me at the moment, but apparently – sad to say, they were better made when they were made in the other country, which, you know, it was interesting to see that there is a difference in manufacture. But we all know that sometimes, you know what, some factories, even with the same machinery, seem to do better. Maybe they maintain their stuff better, or they have a better handle on quality control. So, I mean, the potential for that weapon to actually be a lot more efficient than most people on the conspiracy side would like to make it out to be is there. So,
yeah.
I say in all fairness, though, that it is not the type of weapon that that anybody who was trying to pull this off would have selected. That's for sure, no matter if you got the best version of it or if you got the crap version of it, which there are plenty of crap versions of it, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does lend itself indeed to that the weapon is not what perhaps a professional, you know, assassin would use, and that might, you know, have some people infer that leans more towards the guilt of Oswald, but Oswald isn't practiced with it. So if someone actually did the shooting, they were going to have to be, in my opinion, much more practiced and much more skilled with a rifle than Oswald was at that time. I mean, people always want to point to it that he was a marksman once, and it really annoyed me in that new Stephen King show, 11-22-63, that they had him alone in a room unobserved, you know, over and over practicing with the bolt and everything and then yelling marksman every time after he set it down. It was like, that is the most unrealistic thing I've seen in quite some time.
Wow. You know, I haven't gone into that thing. I hear it's on Hulu now.
Well, they had to fill that hole because nowhere in the government's case can they do that. No one ever saw him practicing.
A lot of holes to be filled in the government's case, but that's a huge one, that's for sure. So this brings us to planning, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll leave it to you on that, because to me, there's lots of ways to do this. And the one remarkable thing about planning when it comes to the specifics on the Kennedy assassination is this one really huge hole. And that is, if I imagine myself – deciding to shoot at someone from an elevated position and kill them publicly like that, if I were to do that, and I had a sidearm available, I would have most assuredly taken it with me. Why? Well, because I would assume that the gunshots might attract attention. I know there'll be law enforcement within the vicinity. I may need a weapon to shoot my way out. This guy, according to the official story, leaves his revolver at the rooming house. Doesn't even take it with him. That's a big problem for me. Even if I'm half out of my mind, I might think, you know what, I better bring all the weapons I can. I might have a knife. You know, I might have something else for close quarters combat. I definitely don't want to try and shoot my way out of the school book depository with a rifle. Okay, that's just my commentary there. And to me, that goes to planning when it comes to Oswald, like what's wrong with this picture. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it's reasonable. It'd be a good idea maybe if we compared with the two, you know, if it were a conspiracy or if it were Oswald as a lone shooter. If that is going – if you go with the official story and you think that Oswald was a lone shooter and why would he forget the gun at his house, as you stated? Now, that would show that he is sloppy. It would infer that he was going to make mistakes, and that's one of the problems with the government's case in that critical – 72 hours right before Kennedy dies, that they can't demonstrate that Oswald could have done all these things with no mistakes, especially if you look at his history. His life is riddled with mistakes.
Well, right. And therefore, you know, some people on the lone nut side of things would say, well, see, that's exact proof that this is one guy operating all by himself. But see, I flip that back on its head and I say to them, here's your problem. If you have a guy who might have been peripherally involved or might have had some heads up that was given because he was going to be positioned as somebody to be sacrificed, he might have been somewhat aware that he needed to go and get that gun because it was going to come back on him somehow or other. And there you have, I really can't join the Oswald Innocence campaign. Okay, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
More than one reason, but I'm saying just on a philosophical level.
Well, it's a gray area, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of times, whether it's official or independent, it's speculation. I mean, if hunting season began on November 16th, Oswald could have been invited to go hunting with someone.
Yeah, right.
If you really want to talk about the possibilities, I mean, he could have brought that gun thinking he was going to go hunting later, and boy, was that perfect.
Yeah, there you go. Talk about a bad day. Of course, you know, even even our friend that brought him to work had an Enfield rifle, which you know, which they kind of pressured him on. It's like, hey, maybe you were working with him since you have a rifle. Interesting stories that come out of that. You know, Buell Wesley Frazier, interesting guy in and of himself. I don't make any mass conclusions about the guy, except I think here's a good example of somebody who did not expect to get caught up in what he got caught up in. That's the way I see it. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? But again, many a gray area. Now, why do I bring all this up? Well, because it does speak to the idea of planning. Okay. And here's what it says in the planning section. When the decision to assassinate has been reached, the tactics of the operation must be planned based on an estimate of the situation similar to that used in military operations. Okay, let me stop there. Why do I stop there, Carmine?
Because if enough, in my opinion, a good reason to hold it right there is that if enough similarities and occurrences are the same, it might infer that, you know, based on the evidence that we have, that would lead to a certain organization and, or at least someone trained by a certain organization and someone with the motive, means, and opportunity to want to undertake the assassination.
Right. Now, this sounds a little convoluted, the next part, but here's the deal. The preliminary estimate will reveal gaps in information and possibly indicate a need for special equipment which must be procured or constructed when all necessary data has been collected. Okay, an effective tactical plan can be prepared. All planning must be mental. No papers should ever contain evidence of the operation. All right.
Which never seems to happen.
Never seems to happen. We seem to always have some sort of paper trail
left
behind. That's odd enough. But when we take a look at some of these other things where it's like special equipment or what do we got to do with the gaps in the information, et cetera, you know, in a lot of ways, things just don't always work out, you know, according to plan. So you also have to have contingencies, right? What if the guy that you wanted to be killed ends up being captured? Let's just say. You got to find a way to deal with that as well. And as we go further, I'm sure it deals with that. Am I taking you off track here?
Oh, no. No, it's fine. Yeah, we're just, you know, we're like we said earlier, we're trying to, you know, just loosely discuss the subject. And I wanted, you know, if, you know, once any of the listeners have questions or anything from the, you know, the chat room, we're more than happy to talk about it. We just, there is no, I think, essential way we could set it down that's going to be definitive for each. Like we were saying, there's different, you know, various plots that it could have been. So, I mean, we'd have to pick a group. You know, you have, of course, the mafia plot, which is fairly popular. You have the exile plot, which is fairly popular. You have the CIA plot, which is fairly popular. But I don't think that it would be any of those groups by them. I think it's less likely that one group would do it alone. I think that it might be a conglomerate group that would be the most likely.
Yeah, and just like you said before, it would be a conglomerate group, but it would be with very minor representation. In other words, there might be one or two guys that were, say, rogue, unhappy, still in the CIA, or former CIA guys. There might be two CIA guys, let's just say, for argument's sake. And that doesn't mean that it precludes mob guys from being involved, but it would be one or two. Okay, and they might come together, and now we got four people.
I'd say the whole thing could get done with 10 people or less.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, I'm just constructing it, you know,
yeah.
As a
– Yeah.
So let's just say you had two mob guys, two CIA guys. Now, that gives you access to a whole lot of assets, a whole lot of equipment, a whole lot of people. Now, it doesn't mean
– throw in a Cuban exile, which there are mobsters and CIA known to have associated with and – a multitude of different situations.
There you go. There's a no-brainer. Let's just throw two of them in there for fun. These two guys would be fully committed to the operation because they're still angry about the Bay of Pigs, the abandonment of the agency, not funding certain organizations anymore, et cetera, et cetera. A whole lot of different grudges could be had here. Let's even use the popular grudge from the alleged mob guys of Bobby Kennedy starting to prosecute these guys. Let's just use that. I mean, not saying that that's where it comes from, but what I'm saying is that people who then have a lot of, well, a lot of skin to offer to the game here could easily be brought in, and we're still only talking about six people, and they could have access to others. Now, you take two mob guys, they can go talk to other people and get things done without anybody ever knowing that it's actually tied to the Kennedy assassination.
Well, and among the ways that they could do that, some of the logistics I know that we can at least verify are the Campisi brothers, who were the mafia connections to Jack Ruby and to Carlos Marcello, had an unlisted phone in the basement of their club, of the Egypt Club, I believe, or the Egyptian Club, and it only called – you could only call out. You couldn't call in, and you could never trace the number. And there were, I would guarantee, hundreds if not thousands of these phones in the hands of various government agencies because they controlled the system and in the hands of people who are criminals who had acquired one.
That's right.
So that's communication without ever being able to be traced.
There you go. So we don't have the phone records being an issue anymore, although we can see things appreciable in the phone records that are pretty suspicious. When it comes to Jack Ruby, I know the House Select Committee spent some time on that.
Yeah, they found patterns of calls that were being made to him by associates of, you know, like Meyer Lansky, when he was talking in our last conversation we had, he had his wishes through the Cellini brothers in New York. They are the ones who contacted Tony Verona, who was one of the exile leaders, about taking out Castro.
There you go. And that's a way that, you know, you can create a buffer between yourself and the actual operation. You could turn around and you could ask, you know, let's just say you're a mob guy in Kansas City. You ask him, listen, I've done favors for you. Here's what I need done for me. I need a guy that nobody talks to, brought to a certain place, and I just basically need you to drop him off. Now, that kind of thing happens all the time. As we speak, in fact, Carmine, I think things like that are
somewhere
happening.
It might be happening right now, somewhere in the world.
People get transported, let's just say. People and things get transported sometimes by a special courier in the criminal world. And you know what? You never know when you might have pulled up to one at a red light. This is why I always tell people, you know, road rage is a really, really suicidal kind of thing to do, because you don't know who that other person is.
Exactly. You don't understand how violent they might be willing to become.
You know, you could literally have, you know, look, some mob guys are effectively serial killers, and yeah. They could be that day driving somebody who's important from one place to another, and their pay, their life, in fact, their entire system of loyalty, everything they know and believe in could be dependent upon bringing that person to a destination safely, whether they know who it is or not. And you're going to go out and jump out of your car and bang on his window? You don't know what's in that car.
Yeah. I mean,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, when you consider it, too, I mean, I would assume that there are more criminals that way, but there's American presidents. I mean, Andrew Jackson was a hatchet-wielding madman.
Yeah,
as far as his treatment of the Indians, you know. So, yeah, they're there. They're in the government. There are people – we all know fringe people, I'm sure, that are on television. You know, they're considered mainstream, but we're lucky that they're not in charge of the CIA.
You know what? I got a weird question from the chat room, but I'm going to go through it real quick. And I'd like to hear what your viewpoint is on this. It's kind of off topic, but then again, we can blend this right into the next part. Did the foreign press parrot the same line as we got? Or did other countries report the assassination very differently? Have you studied the way the foreign press handled the assassination, Carmine?
Actually, that was one of the files that I read from the CIA, where they went through and asked. There was a lot of disbelief at the Warren Commission. A lot of, I mean, not just domestically. I think domestically, after the commission was the lowest the doubt was, and now we're upwards of 70% of the public doubts, to 80% of the American public doubting the case. But the foreign, they actually doubted it earlier in greater numbers than we did. The French doubted it. The Germans, I remember, doubted it. And that's one of the things that I found was, and I talk about a little bit in the book, is that General Walker had been in contact with some of the German press prior to them finding the note in
right.
That linked Oswald to the Walker note in the book that Ruth Payne had turned over to the DPD. So the foreign press was actually fairly informed, and they knew what was going on nearly right after what occurred in Dallas.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I would say that in the days following the assassination, in the weeks and even the few months following the assassination, for the most part, the foreign press was parroting what the American press was saying. They were taking it at face value. However, long before the American press acknowledged that there was any sort of a problem with any of this, I mean, they were following around the Warren Commission when they made their, you know, little field trips and things, and they were observing this and that and the third, and there were little leaks that came out and things that were publicly known about it during the investigation in America. But for the most part, I would say they quite honestly took it at face value in America. However, European news agencies, I'm very sure, were reporting doubts and were actually allowing people to express opinions very early. And especially after the Warren Commission came out, I think the very first, like, you know, television and radio shows that were critiquing it publicly in a, you know, in a mass media sort of sense, came out of England, came out of Germany, came out of Ireland. Long before the American, you know, media ever touched it. So I would say they were well ahead of the curve. But for the immediate, you know, just like everything else, in the immediate, you generally believe the first reports that are leaked out, or at the very least, you entertain them quite well because they are the initial reports. I think that has changed a great deal now. And when you see these international organizations that control news agencies now, it's become a lot less diverse. I would say that, you know, the BBC has a great deal of interest in reporting the very same thing that a CNN does, and they often very much stick to the same story for quite some time. The only way that you get something else, quite honestly, is through independent media for the most part, and the occasional rare renegade person who interjects themselves into mainstream media, and that's now an international business much more than it would have been at the time of the assassination. So, do you think that's a fair estimation, what I said there, Carmine?
Yeah, actually, I found the document. I'll have to type up the description and send it to you so you can post it for the people in the chat room. But it's a memorandum that was sent to the CIA, analysis of the world's reaction to President Kennedy's assassination.
Yeah, I know I've read that before at some point, but I don't know if I have it right by me.
Yeah.
Anyway, believe it or not, we've run out of time in the first hour, but we will return in the next hour. We're continuing with the discussion of logistics and the JFK assassination with my co-host Carmine Savastano on the Ocelli Effect. Stay tuned to American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
Practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
Everybody talking about gun control. Gotta get rid of the guns. I like guns. You got a gun, you don't have to work out. I ain't working out. I ain't jogging. You don't need no gun control. You know what you need? We need some bullet control. We need to control the bullets. That's right. I think all bullets should cost $5,000. You know why? Because if a bullet costs $5,000, there'll be no more innocent bystanders. Every time somebody gets shot, they'll be like, damn, he must have did something. So they put $50,000 worth of bullets in his hand. And people will think before they kill somebody if a bullet costs $5,000. Man, I would blow your head off if I could afford it. I'm going to get me another job. I'm going to start saving some money. And you a dead man.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect. The most underrated voice in all media.
The alternative. Chuck Ocelli. And so the second hour begins here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, where the Ocelli Effect originates from. Do thank you for tuning in, whether you're finding us later on down the stream, going through the archives, or catching us on YouTube or some other affiliate. You are also equally appreciated. And if you go to Ocelli.com right about now, you will find that there is a free section of stuff up, which I'm going to augment a little later. And we're going to put up a show with Carmine that I did recently. And perhaps it'll wind up in the rotation at AFR as well. I'm going to take a look at that soon. But one way or another, if you go to Ocelli.com, I do appreciate you also. And there is a live stream thing right there for AFR on my website. So there you go. Anyway, what were we discussing? Well, we started discussing what happened with the media. This is as far as we got. What happened with the media overseas, what the reaction was like, and, of course, Carmine always has a document, usually when I bring something up, came up with a document, which I have now put in the chat room for you guys. If you take a look there at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, we do have a chat room, and it is interesting. Some very, very cool people show up in there now and then, and I appreciate them as well. You know, I put the link there so people could read it for themselves, but as we were discussing, you know, it was interesting that there was a reaction in a global sense at that time to the assassination. But, you know, the CIA concerns itself with media a lot. And they really did back then in an interesting way. They came up with methodologies which they codified into rules for how to deal with critics of the Warren Commission at more than one point. And that's not for foreign press either. They were talking about how to deal with it in America. And if you don't believe me, do a little search on it. You'll find some of that documentation. And, of course, I've discussed that on this program with Joan Mellon quite extensively, because that was one of the documents that that she studied quite in depth when she was examining various documents for some of her books. And it was also relevant to the Jim Garrison case, in that Garrison was making a lot of news when he attempted to have the only trial which has ever been publicly held against someone who had involvement in the assassination. Because Lee Harvey Oswald never went to trial, friends, but Clay Shaw was brought to trial and acquitted. And, well, I refer you to those shows if you want to learn more about the Jim Garrison case. Anyway, so Carmine, where were we again? We had discussed the media. We were moving through the assassination guide, and I can't – you know what? I've got to do more than one of these shows on the assassination guide a year, because it's just I think it is one of the most astounding documents ever unearthed.
Well, I was happy to bring it out for everybody to have a look at.
It's really great, because – It's literally an instruction manual, how it is you're supposed to deal with assassinations, and a fascinating read if you've never read that before, by the by.
And it precedes President Kennedy's assassination by 9 years, so.
Yeah, that too, which means that if the methodology were in place there.
Exactly. If someone had designed this guide or helped this guide or read this guide in their tenure between those years, and they had decided to leave the agency or decided to ignore the rules of the agency, then I think the guide's existence makes it a lot more feasible rather than just speculating about what they might have planned.
Right. And look, we could speculate day and night and never finish any of these shows because, well, it's easy to do. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when you take a look at the things that they did decide to put on paper, and remember that they were encouraged not to put a lot on paper, you can imagine, many of the interesting adventures that we've seen revealed over the years with the agency, with this type of activity. Governments overthrown, entire populations decimated in one way or another. The trajectory of the history of entire groups of people changed at the whim of these operations which have been implemented. And I'm not talking about wide-eyed conspiracy theory. I'm talking about the acceptable public historical record. We all know that that means that if you dig a little deeper, there's usually much more dirt. Anyway, getting back to it.
Okay, well, did you want to go on with the reaction of the different countries, or do you want to go back to logistics?
Well, you know what? The reaction of the different countries. Why not get into that? Because now this one you're going to have to help me with, because this is one of those things that I would normally have to blow up much larger to read.
Okay, it's no problem.
And, so I leave this one to you, but this comes from the House Select Committee on Assassinations Segregated CIA Collection, which, by the way, if you do go through those collections, there is a great deal to be learned and a great deal of misunderstandings one might clear up if they have been studying how the agency behaved and the misrepresentations, let's just say, of certain authors and filmmakers. You begin to get a better sense of it when you actually look at the agency's documents themselves. So, anyway, I will leave it at that. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. The agency was definitely concerned about what, because not only was there the value of it might infer whether or not there was involvement, but there's also the value of they could use it for propaganda purposes. So, because there were people that were in our government, definitely at the time, who were dedicated to wanting this to have been a communist plot, because that opens up the world for invasion. Well, anywhere they wanted to, they could invade if communists had had a part in the assassination.
Right. Now, let's remember this. No matter what the actual guts of any operation are, no matter what the actions are, whether it be assassination, government overthrow, election rigging, et cetera, there is always, always the next aspect of the operation, which is considered, how do we use this for propaganda purposes? Now, some might think that they would only accentuate, spotlight the things that are mission accomplished, let's just say. But no, these guys turn around and they utilize anything, whether it's a complete failure or it's a mission accomplished or a mixed result. It doesn't matter. There is always an entire other group of people devoted to how do we spin this and utilize it for propaganda purposes? This is something that some people get a little lost on. They sometimes think, well, this must be done for propaganda. This must be done for an operation. They never realize that the two always are hand in hand. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah. There's someone that is – I would assume some of these agencies are always trying to realize a benefit, from no matter even if an operation goes wrong. They want to spin it to where it's a positive. So,
Right. So here's the deal. Let's just say that there is a political leader, and here's me speculating and speaking in generalizations. But
we could call him DM, or we could call him
right
Mozadik, or we could call him Jacob Arbenz, or we could call him
names that sound awfully familiar. But we could call him anything. There are many, many different names you could apply. Even I argue a name like Lumumba. And anyway, so
John Witten said, they were guilty of conspiring to murder him. They didn't actually do it.
Well, you know, if you set somebody up, it's just one of those
exactly.
things. If you put somebody in a position, I mean, realistically, Diem and Nu were not killed by CIA guys, as far as I know.
No. But it was, though there were the CIA guys in the military who were advising the generals who ended up doing it.
But that's still not them direct. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly.
So here's the thing, though, is even in a situation like, let's just say, where you are influencing individuals who will do the dirty work you want done, let's just say that dirty work doesn't happen. Well, now somebody could seize upon that as anything. You could say, let's just say the assassination of Diem and Nu was unsuccessful, but there was an attempt made. All right? Now someone could utilize that to either demonize the individual who is the target or to demonize the individuals who are taking the action, okay, to ask for more money, more military support, to create a sympathetic kind of view in the public's mind. Let's just say in one country it's reported that they are heroes because they narrowly escaped. I mean, this would be in the old days. I mean, obviously nowadays you can't segregate things by region like this because news from Southeast Asia didn't arrive in America very often. In the 1960s. Today, we could have it in 5 seconds. So you can't play this game today. But let's just go back in time. In the 1960s, you could tell the people in Southeast Asia that these individuals narrowly escaped and that they were great heroes and that you should approach them. Now, why would they do that? Let's just say they don't quite have a fix on where they are. They would utilize public sentiment to cause a commotion so that they could be detected while they're trying to travel and they can take another whack at them. Now, does that sound like paranoid conspiracy to you?
No.
Because
it sounds like verifiable history.
We know that this is the kind of thing that they did.
that they most likely still do. I mean, I've read some of the intelligence practices that even the agents would use on each other was abominable. I was reading about spy dust. It was this highly toxic abrasive dust that could cause lung infections and all sorts of skin irritation that the Russians were dumping on to people they suspected of being American so that they could use radioactive sensors to detect them and where they were going around Moscow.
Oh, yeah. They even had the whole thing where, you know, they had a mechanism where you could cough this you could basically hold up a handkerchief to your face, cough into it, and it would project into the room while protecting you various poisons.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting thing I learned about. I don't know if you ever read about that, but that was one of the interesting methodologies. Like when they did those hearings and they, you know, the very famous deal where they bring out that gun.
The heart attack gun.
Right, the heart attack gun and all that. You know, it wasn't flights of fancy. It wasn't, you know, weapons in the testing phase. They were doing this stuff. This was part of the game. And so interesting enough. But anyway, back to the propaganda aspect. Let's imagine for a moment you tell them they're heroes and you use the public to out them. Okay. Now, on an international level, you could say that they were already dead or even tell the local population that they're already dead even though they escaped. Now, if they go into hiding, then somebody has to seize control of the government. So maybe you position – see what I mean? You turn around and you utilize the propaganda aspect to cause an action to occur. Okay? Or let's just say that, you know, somebody is killed as a result of an explosion, but they're not really killed. Now, that sounds like, again, crazy conspiracy theory, but it is useful to remove the idea that somebody is still alive sometimes. So let's just say that he had been captured and they were deciding what to do with him. They tell the population that he's been murdered by explosion. Therefore, you can't even show them verifiable proof that the guy's dead. Now, if everything rolls along nice and smoothly, you just put a bullet in his head and stick him into an incinerator. Problem solved. If there's problems because of it and you need to actually reinsert that leader, you can always bring him back around, say that he survived the explosion, explain to him you better not say a single word about it, otherwise we will, you know, cremate you somewhere while you're still alive or whatever. Gee, this is how the propaganda thing always goes along with the action. So whether you have a failed action or a successful action, no matter what stage it's in, you can utilize propaganda to push populations, to push world opinion, to create trigger points for military action. All of these things are on the table when it comes to this game. I don't know. Am I sounding like kooky to you, Carmine?
No, no more than usual.
Thank you.
You know, I'm just kidding.
No, it's okay.
I was going to say, and there was also media manipulation occurred to the commission, against the commission, in fact, because there's, in some of the executive sessions, McCloy and Gerald Ford actually talks about it being disturbed, that articles that were submitted to the commission for their approval to sign off on, that the Department of Justice wanted to submit to the press, the commission wouldn't sign off on them because they didn't agree with all the speculations on them. And those articles eventually were leaked by anonymous sources to the press in order to try to gear the American public's thinking of things. And
right,
ultimately, too, that's how the commission was formed, ironically, because Hoover and Johnson just wanted to have the FBI investigation where they investigated Oswald, they investigated the assassination. It was done by the FBI, turned over to RFK, and that was the end of it. But Katzenbach and RFK, through Abe Fortas, actually leaked ideas that the Department of Justice about having a commission rather than having just an FBI investigation.
Right, and if you go back in the LBJ library, you can literally listen to a conversation between Hoover and LBJ where LBJ states, and I'll paraphrase here, well, they're talking about wanting to have a commission. I just want to go with your report.
Yep.
And that report is the, you know, allegedly, what is it, five-volume report, which ends up being about 300 pages long, where Hoover doesn't even have the sixth floor of the depository building noted. I think he says it's the fifth floor.
It was done in 72 hours, so I understand why there are mistakes. Anybody that thinks that they can solve that case in 72 hours is going to make some mistakes.
I knew you were going to bring that up. That's exactly why I threw it there. And there were many mistakes in that report. And today, if you look around, you can find a copy of it.
Yes, it wasn't circulating. Hoover did not want that one to circulate very long after all the mistakes were brought up.
Yes, but today you can find it. And here's the interesting part. Out of all the crap that they put in the Warren Commission exhibits and all that, notice – the FBI report is not one of their exhibits.
Yeah.
But anyway. So let's go forward with this, though, with the use of propaganda and the commission and this document. Whoop, you still there?
Can you hear me? Yeah. It discusses more the world's feeling rather than the propaganda aspect. Like, I agree with all of, you know, the assessment that you gave, that propaganda is definitely used, and, you know, we can see it over and over throughout the case trying to steer the public. Even today, certain people attempt to use the media, who shall remain nameless, Roger Stone, to offer propaganda to influence the voters in the political scene. But anyway.
Well, because public sentiment, remember what I said many times here, public sentiment is a useful tool. Well, you can't utilize public sentiment unless you know what it is to begin with. You got to find out what organically people think to begin with before you decide how to manipulate it.
Well,
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I think the agency was shocked too at some of what they found. You know, it's a fairly short document. It's only six pages. We don't have to go through all of it because, you know, we do want to talk more about logistics. But this is definitely, yeah, this would be a logistical part of, you know, any propaganda operation was trying to gauge. After President Kennedy died, Russia, of course, was the eminent concern because there were people who were trying to say that it was Russia that organized it, that it was communists, and, you know, the huge outside plot. But since the assassination of President Kennedy, the document states Soviet leaders have refrained from taking any actions the U.S. and the rest of the world could interpret as calculated to embarrass the U.S. Soviet interest in maintaining the atmosphere of detente created by a nuclear test ban treaty was demonstrated by the appointment of Mikoyan to represent the USSR, President Kennedy's funeral. He is close to Khrushchev and personally acquainted with many high-level U.S. officials and participated in the settlement of the Cuban Missile Crisis last fall. Moscow has consistently presented that settlement as the epitome of peaceful coexistence in action.
Right, and also diplomatically, they encouraged various people that were in embassies all over the place that were representing the USSR to make statements that said, look, we had absolutely nothing to do with this. they were kind of coming out and stating, you know, to like condemning the action, no matter who took it. It wasn't us, but we condemn it. This was the kind of thing that was coming out. And also, unbeknownst to many Americans, the USSR actually launched an initial investigation of their own immediately after the assassination. Why? Well, because they knew that they could easily be blamed. Okay, the world community could easily say, look, there's plenty of tension between the USSR and the US, and hey, hello motive, right?
So, unfortunately, yeah, though, it just seemed to be the absolute worst time to, you know, and I think some people who support the communist theory should really look at it again, because the forward motion that was going on between Khrushchev and Kennedy wouldn't have given them any motive to do so. Once again, it could have been a paramilitary group, maybe, but it wasn't anyone in charge, because they had nothing but to lose if they were to kill Kennedy.
Right, and unbeknownst to many people today, but to everyone at that time, Kennedy and Khrushchev were actually in private communication regarding the direction that the relationship between the two, quote, superpowers was going to take. This was exactly the wrong time for the Soviet Union to even consider something like decapitating our government. And also, it would have been kind of fruitless, because they knew that, you know, unless they were going to take out many, many people, we had somebody to succeed him right away, who, if there was even the slightest hint of a problem coming from the USSR, if it was even the slightest bit of guilt to be assigned to them, it would have been disastrous for them. You know, they would have had to engage us. There would have been no more detente discussions. There would have been, you know, you literally struck us on our own soil, even though it's only one man. Well,
it's the government.
It's the government. So how would that reaction have gone down? Think about it. But, okay, you know, counterintuitive things aside.
So Soviet leaders were apparently as profoundly moved and shocked by the slaying of President Kennedy as with leaders of America's closest allies. In addition to his formal message of condolence, Khrushchev personally visited the U.S. Embassy. He recalled to the American ambassador that Lenin had condemned nihilist activities and asserted that the Soviet Communist Party is traditionally opposed to terrorism. Madame Khrushcheva also visited the embassy and referred warmly to her memories of the Vienna meeting with the Soviet citizens. She knows were shaken by the tragedy.
So there you go. So back to the logistical concerns here, and I think we definitely hit this subject pretty well so far.
Yeah.
But back to logistical concerns.
Okay, well, going on. So the telephones that we were discussing could have just been one of the various means. An untraceable phone that didn't have a record to be put out could have been one of the proper time frame means that they could have used that would have been available to them. It would have been easily available to criminals. So I assume government and ex-government agents might have been able to get it as well.
Oh, sure. There were these little machines actually that were portable that one could tap into an existing phone line somewhere and utilize as well. You didn't even have to this thing didn't even have to be stationary. We've seen that kind of equipment. I think that stuff is actually at the Intelligence Museum in Washington, D.C. right now, where they show you how that stuff works. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's a different thing than what you were talking about before. But what I'm saying to you is that, you know, phone lines were not as sturdy and stationary as people in the general public would have thought they were at the time. Okay, there was a useful way to tap into that network on a lot of levels, and not all of them were readily available, let's just say, to the general public.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't available to the general public, and even if you were going to go to the general public, I mean, let's just take the most rudimentary things. You know, either in World War II, I was watching a documentary where they talked about that you could actually they would leave messages under rocks, messages in hollow logs, messages, you know, if you carved a little niche somewhere in the side of a stone, you could just leave a message in there. So these people had it could have been from rudimentary all the way to untraceable phone calls. You know, there were all sorts of ways that they could communicate with one another, and they wouldn't have to communicate all the time, too. I think that some people think that, you know, they had to be a closely associated group of people that hung out together. No, that's not necessary whatsoever. They don't really have to know each other than to know that they are all unified in this one thing, and that by associating with each other publicly, they would be drawing more attention. So it's probably not going to be people who were seen a lot together in public. You know, it's probably going to be people from different walks of life who don't associate because it would draw attention to do so.
Right, and this is where compartmentalization comes into play because, look, you could have individuals that are involved with carrying those messages or creating them, you know, the more rudimentary things like you were talking about. They could be put into place by someone who has absolutely no clue what they're actually doing, mm-hmm. that has no part in the plot, does not realize that that's what the purpose is, doesn't even realize who it's intended for, and meanwhile they've been sent to do it. Especially when you have a conglomeration of criminal and intelligence assets, this whole thing can become so murky that, quite honestly, there could have been 100 people that participated in the communication aspect without ever knowing what they were actually communicating. So therefore, they would have no knowledge that would be even remotely useful of any sort of plot or even the individuals that were truly sending them to do things.
Yeah. Well, and we know, yeah, that intelligence agency officials, whether domestic or foreign, use coded ciphers. I thought it was kind of crazy. Probably about 2 months ago, I and my wife were visiting family, and her nephew was showing me a encrypted cipher that he and his friends would use so that they could pass messages without the teacher knowing what that they were doing.
Yeah, right. This is something children will do, yes.
Well, now, you know, I mean, a lot more technologically advanced than we were. But, you know, our version would have been the, what was it, the Ovaltine ring?
Well,
the code
no.
ring, where you can See, match up different code.
Well, maybe I just lived in a slightly more criminal-minded area when I was a kid. But we used to write notes to people that were gibberish.
Mm-hmm. If you didn't know the code.
Exactly. You know, like or numeric ciphers where, you know, each letter is actually represented by a number. And what they have basically is a list of numbers and it's a short message. I did that as a kid personally. So
so fairly, especially in the day and the time when this occurred, I would assume that it would have been fairly easy to be able to send messages. And, you know, you have all the major agencies represented in a large city like Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all those possibilities right there. And then there's all the peripheral people connected to them, too, because this could have also been, you know, mid-level nobodies, whether they were officially connected or not. They just had enough contacts, they had enough knowledge, and they wanted to see the deed done.
Exactly right. And like I said again, compartmentalization, I mean, I just illustrated one way that it could be compartmentalized, but, you know, I'm not a CIA guy, so I'm sure there's many more imaginative ways to do it. I'm just giving you a very basic sense of how it can be done. Anyway, moving forward, though, I mean, into the planning, I mean, where do you want to go from here?
Well, I would think that one of the big holes in the official case is, yeah, when discussing the planning, as we talked about in one of the prior episodes of your show, Oswald only had 24 to 48 hours. I'm actually going to try to work on that, and that might I'm going to try to do a presentation later in the year talking about that. But he only had that time frame. So that is highly improbable that he could have gotten everything done without making a mistake to carry out the assassination. It's going to take a lot longer than 24 to 48 hours of usable time to get done what happened.
Well, yeah, you would think so.
Yeah, well, a motive. I mean, who develops a motive in 24 to 48 hours that can be appreciable, that we can verify? I mean, what happened in 24 to 48 hours that turned this mild-mannered guy into an assassin?
Yeah, a lot of interesting things to explain with him, actually, because, you know, any of the discussions he seemed to have with people that were on a political level, this was a guy who wasn't even talking about Kennedy, generally speaking. Now, I'm taking this at the word of individuals who talked to him, who interacted with him, you know, in the months previous, people that I actually believe interacted with him in the months previous. You know, and the thing is that, the interesting sort of, let's just say what is not alluded to very often, what seems to be, completely absent from his discussions is a focus on John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Even in a heated political discussion, we have no focus on John F. Kennedy. In fact, it seemed to me as though, and this is going to sound really weird, but I can draw a much more passionate picture of Oswald's thoughts about integration and the fact that that people should be treated equally, a fairly liberal kind of standpoint at the time for certain, but racial issues, I know he's a white guy and all that, but racial issues seem to have more of a passionate resonance in his open discussions with people than did the President of the United States and his behavior.
Yeah, and by far Marxism overtook, you know, well, an outdated form of Marxism anyway.
Right.
Overtook a lot of his public interactions as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, if you look at the public statements, I mean, you know, he cannot explain the difference between, you know, a Marxist-Leninist and a communist. There is a difference. So he had the wherewithal to say that, but had no way to explain it. He tries to draw certain comparisons about different societies, and that's about as far as he can go. But I'm talking about in private conversations, when you ask people what it was he was talking about, and you eventually get into, well, what was his politics sounding like? I mean, was there a hatred of Kennedy that he talked about? Was there a focus on the administration, you know, really giving such a hard time to the Cuban people and the Russian people, which he could sympathize with, you know, things like that? And most of that is absent. In fact, like I said, consistently what I find in these 4 years previous to the assassination, when I ask for people to recount the types of discussions they had with him, again, he seemed to have more of a concern with social issues. Not a particular vitriolic, you know, extremely intense or passionate anger toward a particular individual, which is usually incumbent upon somebody who decides to murder someone, you know, directly. It's usually, I mean, if this guy was saying, look, I blame Kennedy for everything that's going wrong, it's the administration, da da da, he never said stuff like that. I asked it repeatedly. And these are conversations that were never going to be heard by anybody else. And I'm sure, you know, I wouldn't think to myself, gee, are they going to be asking, you know, the girl I dated 4 years ago, if I go to do something today, what my thoughts were on it. But during those previous 4 years, I find no accounts from people that were in close proximity to him of something resembling that, you know, that motive where they develop it in their minds and they, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the officials can never demonstrate it, which is one of the problems that I think, you know, speaks to the lack of them having proved what their assertion is. You know, the guilt is placed first.
Right.
And then they attempt to build a case based on preponderance of evidence. But even based on that preponderance, in my opinion, if you look at the legal weight is not on the official case.
Mm.
You know, you definitely they're able to cobble together their best guess. That is what, to me, the Warren Commission represents. I think there are some useful things in it. I a lot of people want to throw it out the window, but I don't think we can throw out any whole investigation out the window. There's going to be some useful aspects to it. But you cannot, you know, lay claim that any one investigation is the definitive one in this case. I know officials don't want to hear this, but we're going to eventually need another, at least, you know, ARRB.
Yeah.
Because there's so many questions left to be opened, and until all the files are turned over, how long will certain things be kept under the guise of national security when most people, if not all, are dead when concerned with it? And if we're actually opening up this new chapter with Cuba, as the Obama administration likes to talk about, why wouldn't we want to come clean on all of that just to end it so that we can move on historically?
Yeah, that would make the most sense. And I mean, I had Sean Stone on this program on Monday. And, I told him that it was amazing to me that Oliver Stone's film his father's film had gotten, had actually provoked the Assassination Records Review Board to be formed, and that was a great thing, but we're still left quite unanswered on a lot of questions. I told him that also,
yeah.
It was interesting discussion with Sean Stone on Monday, if you guys missed it, but,
Well, I definitely credit them Stone with an accomplishment. Unfortunately, I think some people go way too far into it and try to make the movie real, and they do a disservice to the research community and to all the credible people that are actually gathering evidence.
Well, right, but given what he was working with, actually, he did a fair job, and he actually had researchers working with him, which were a little questionable, some of them, let's just say, mm-hmm. But the fact is that
it's a work of fiction. You know, people need to realize there's no need to try to make it the truth because, first of all, it's not. It's a drama.
Right.
You know, it inspired. It is great because it the inspiration that occurred and actually had an effect in the real world. That I'll credit it with being great for. But as far as, you know, a guide of facts, you can't go off of JFK if you really want to know about the assassination.
No, but still, honestly, not bad considering what he was working with. And if you ever want to take a look at what the comparison to the historical record was at the time and the script itself, there's an annotated version of the script, which you can probably get on Amazon for like $2 at this point. It's like JFK, the movie script.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually explain why they inserted certain facts that they did and why they inserted certain elements into the dramatic presentation. So it's interesting, and I read that and found it interesting. I think it was actually a more responsible view than a lot of other people think it was. Some things are flat wrong, but
I don't think that they should be attacked because of that. I think both sides just got way too serious about it. I think that, you know, there are the pro-conspiracy people who want to say that it's all real, like Fetzer. And then, you know, because he was – I remember one of the unfortunate speeches he gave that I heard part of where he talked about how Oliver Stone had gotten everything right except there were 16 shots or something ridiculous. But,
yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you've got the people who do that with it. But you've also got, conversely, the Bugliosis and other people who trash it, saying that it has no redeemable value, which is not true. It's still a good movie.
Right, absolutely true. And I'm being asked about Warren Commission, like what it is. Look, if you want a good deconstruction of the Warren Commission, I'll give you two very good suggestions, and I'm sure that the books are available. Walt Brown wrote something called The Warren Omission, and that actually gives you a lot of not only mathematical conclusions that one can make about the commission, but actually denotes in a very quick form how the commission was formed and all that stuff. Very concise, a short book. And the work of Roger Remington, all of his stuff actually is very deconstructionist with the Warren Commission and can explain to you a great deal about why certain things happened and how they came to be. Like Arlen Specter, who was supposed to be a junior counselor, winds up very, very active, in fact, the most active of the counselors on the Warren Commission, because the guy who was supposed to be his superior pretty much showed up one time and never came back. Interesting stuff like that, and Remington explains it extremely well. If you take a look at his work, and there's somebody who you don't hear from very often, Roger Remington. But yeah, I would suggest those books, guys, if you want to take a look at Deconstruction on the Warren Commission specifically. And we could do hours on it if you want, but I think of it as extraneous at this point to go through it. But learn for yourselves if you like. Okay. So back to it. Geez, can you believe? We've only got a little bit of time left. I know this is an odd conversation, and some people find it, you know, like, why is he still going over the JFK assassination? Because there are so many people still quite misinformed. Like I said, when I got past this thing, again, this rich man's whatever JFK deal.
Yeah.
And I'm being told that this particular radio guy is going to, like, play the audio of it on his show. I tried to advise him against it, and you know what? It means to me that still there are people that are not taking a responsible view of it. They use it as the bedrock of where it is they go regarding, you know, their viewpoints on the government and what they see emerging today, what they see being covered up today. And look, if you're not well informed about the history of this stuff, if you don't understand the way these things really function, and you're basing your ideas on the conclusions of others, which are poorly founded, you know, then how strong, how valuable are your conclusions, your statements, and your attempts to educate people? So I'll always go back to this because, again, it is one of those starting points for where people begin to think that, you know what, there may be some more truth that needs to be brought to the people, and you're right. But let's try not to give them any more of the garbage while we're at it, okay? Well, anyway, Carmine, it is amazing to go through this, and I'm sorry I have kind of stopped you to make these statements left and right, but I think all these points have been necessary to make.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and it's a very, you know, long and in-depth topic. Like you said, we could go on for hours and hours just regarding, because of all the possibilities. And like I said, there's people need to be open-minded. They need to be willing to accept new evidence, and they need to be willing to accept that they're going to be wrong about some things, and there's going to be adjustments required, no matter who it is. No one is so educated or so well-read on this subject that they cannot stand to learn something new about it or to look into a new set of files. There's millions of documents, and I think that's one of the biggest challenges that people overlook. No one is going to hand you a smoking gun, but if you get enough of the pieces out of the millions of files, then you will actually be able to put something together of value that I think can stand the evidentiary process.
Right, which is exactly the kind of work that you've been doing over the past few years.
Thanks.
I really do appreciate what you do. I mean, not only working on the Cryptonyms project, you know, but also, here we go, I forget to do this all the time, but, you know, the book Two Princes and a King, which actually gives a concise view of not only the JFK assassination, but the assassination of RFK and the assassination of Dr. King. Thusly, the two princes are the Kennedys, and the king is Dr. King in the title. And It is available on Amazon. It's available at the websites. You know what? Before we get out of here, go ahead and make sure to remind people about that too, the websites and where the book is. And you got any specials coming up, by the way?
I'm going to be having one soon. I'll probably announce it on your show, and I'll let the people know at the Lone Gunman podcast. I'm basically just telling your audience and Rob's audience, because I'd like, those are the people I'd like to benefit most, because they're the people that have supported us and, you know, hung out for the shows and asked when I was going to be back. So they can pick that up at tpaak.com, tpaak.com. You can also find us at neamg.com, neamg.com. You can go to the Lone Gunman podcast page. which has a link to us, and there's a link on Ocelli.com. You can also, look for our conversations. We have them sometimes in social media and try to get people involved, in talking about it publicly. And as you saw from earlier in the chat room, drop a question and we'll do our best to answer it.
Yeah, absolutely. One piece of commentary from the chat room, which I missed a little bit. It was probably earlier when we were talking about the media, but I think this is interesting. Factual news and titillating entertainment have been homogenized. Movies and TV, facts spelled F-A-X, not facts spelled F-A-C-T-S. And you know what? In media, this is what we do find, is that quite often they have gone to the hyperbolic, structure. They've turned around and created legends out of many things, and it is hard to discern what is actually news and what is infotainment, which might contain some information, but contains a lot more entertainment than you might want to believe. That's exactly what I'm trying not to do here. Yes, I'd like to entertain you by the discussion, that's for sure. But for the most part, I'm not going to sit here and create things to only entertain you. I try and inform you. That's the primary concern here, guys. So, anyway, I don't know where else we want to go, but, there's only maybe another 10, 12 minutes left, and let's see, how could we kind of bottle this all up in one shot for tonight? Well, there are many, many different concerns that that go into an operation, right? And one thing that could be said, whether you believe that there was a single lone wolf involved or there was a conglomeration of individuals that culminated in one way or another in order to achieve a specific goal, there's a logic to it at all times, and there are many concerns. There are many different aspects which must come together in one way or another. And the interesting thing to me is that quite often in some of the most celebrated cases of criminal activity, political upheaval, positioning and propaganda, we often find that there are individuals whose fingerprints can be found. We can often find that there are many nexuses which can be identified. And I hate it when we waste time with wild speculation without actually having substantial evidence. So I always reach for the substantial evidence first. Perhaps we can build something off of it, and maybe all of it won't be substantial evidence that we can put in front of our faces and read, because not everything gets committed to paper.
Yeah.
But a logical trail is often left.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's the reality we're going to have to face with, is that until we can get through at least a majority of the documents, even with all – let's say that they released everything they have in their files. Mm-hmm. Then it's just a waiting game. They're hoping that anyone who actually has the wherewithal to stay that long will go through them all before they die. The challenge will be in trying to divvy up portions of the record to be read by all sorts of different people who have some sort of communication, so that the pieces that will answer the biggest questions can be brought together. And then you've got the human factor to add into all that there's going to be politics and disagreements and grudges and, all the things that you've talked to me about and I've talked to other people about, and learning the history of the research community that have occurred. So we just have to avoid the pitfalls, and try to – because I'd like to see some advancement. I think a lot of people feel that way too. But I think some people just want to forever endure the parlor game.
Right. And look, whether we're talking about the JFK assassination or we're talking about this recent revelation from the, quote, Panama Papers, here's the deal. Even when and I've discussed these Panama Papers a few times. I'm sure you've heard about them, Carmine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
here's
not surprised.
Thing, you know, no big surprises here, but here's the thing that does surprise me, is that nobody seems to have learned the lesson that when you have a large repository of documentation, it will take some time to sort through it and get anything resembling answers. Okay? And look, 5 million documents in the JFK records collection. All right. Countless others released before that. I don't even know the count.
Yeah, the and all pages, the cases.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was just gonna say and they intentionally made it harder. Like the CIA, instead of just putting all of the besides the files we know that were destroyed, the over 30 that were destroyed from Oswald's 201 file, they put in files from what should have been 100 other 201 files all into one file. You know, that couldn't have been a coincidence that happened. It didn't happen in anybody else's case.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to happen normally speaking. You know, you expect that if you're going to keep personnel files and you're going to keep them so they can be referenced and utilized, someone might want to be able to index them, utilize them, things like that for operational purposes. Not us, not the public, not the researchers, but you would think that they wouldn't necessarily be in the condition that we often find them in when they finally do get into our hands.
Yeah, and then you have some people operating against each other within the official construct. You know, people don't understand all the politics and all the grudges that exist in the research community are amplified. Give them some power and a budget and see what people are like. You know, and then you have madmen like Angleton or Hoover, who basically have unlimited budgets and are ignoring the law, and they want to protect all their programs they've run rampant with, so they are basically covering up anything in sight just to make no connection to themselves.
Yeah, which is par for the course. And yes, Blarg in the chat room, I would say that we are living in a somewhat weaponized culture, and therefore that is also responsible for the state of the media. This is something that prevails at this time, and that's kind of what I'm working against here. So do appreciate all you guys who decided to stick with us for this particular episode of Sinister History. No, it is not quite as exciting as Crossdressers, the Klan, faith healing, and escaped mental patients winding up being Texas politicians.
And karaoke, apparently. And
karaoke? That still kills me. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, take a look at the two interviews with John Collins, Steve Rowe, and Carmine was along for the ride on those two. But there is a great deal more to be discovered, and I'll tell you what, I am going to have a good time, I think, next week with Casey, if he'll agree, because it should be something definitely new that you haven't necessarily heard before, and that's one of the aims that we go for here. You know, we definitely try to bring you things that are not necessarily being discussed elsewhere. So I hope everybody dealt with my my wild speculations about some of this stuff and my odd sort of illustrations. But all in all, I think it was pretty informative and pretty enlightening to go back through this subject once again and to break it down in a slightly different manner. So, but Carmine Savastano, once again, give them the websites because I really want them to check out Two Princes and a King. Not only that, by the way, not just your book, but I would like them also to check out the many articles you put out regarding these subjects, taking a look at the CIA in general, the different operations. I think it is all extremely helpful and useful for someone who doesn't necessarily understand intelligence and the way that, say, the agency proper was operating at certain points and, quite honestly, still operates similarly today.
I appreciate that, Chuck. It's Two Princes and a King, TPAAK.com, TPAAK.com, and we have a section called the Primary Evidence Collections where I've tried to document as much of the primary evidence, the harder to find things that are in files that are quite long. So I'll just try to take out a portion of them so the public can have, you know, a slight review of what's going on inside them. We have CIA biographic profiles, cryptonyms, pseudonyms, and aliases of various people and famous individuals that you might have heard associated with the case. A CIA defector study that looked at Oswald and dozens of other defectors. The historical structure of the CIA and some of the holdings they had, some CIA security files, the more well-known names. The agency is what, yeah, right now I'm specializing in my studies. And, you know, I'm hoping to make it easier for other people and give them a starting point if they want to do research on their own or if they're interested in looking at what I've offered.
And that's another thing. A lot of your work is equally valuable to novices as well as seasoned researchers, because quite honestly, I've discovered new things by taking a look at your work. And that's not easy for me to say, considering well, that I spent quite a long time.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of stuff. You've told me about a lot of things that I was not around for that I unfortunately missed.
Yeah, well, I think you fortunately missed a great deal of the things that I had to waste my time
with. Yeah, I guess. I suppose that's true, too.
But anyway, thanks again, Carmine, for doing this with me, and we will do this again next week. Meanwhile, all the people that are listening to The Ocelli Effect here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, I appreciate you. I will return tomorrow, and I want to thank all you guys for listening. By the way, I think Stephen D. Kelly is up next. But Carmine, thanks again for doing this with me.
No problem, Chuck.
And we will see you tomorrow.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom. American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powdered seeds and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
When you're ready to rise up, you'll rise up. All the power you need is in your hands. Now look around you. Our financial systems have been hijacked by a generation of thieves. While you're working harder and harder for less and less, the game is being rigged against you. They're turning all of us into virtual slaves. Looters, at the heart of our financial system, are price-fixing our most precious resources. Food, water, energy, gold. Even the value of money itself is being siphoned away by high-level crooks in a giant mushrooming conspiracy of unstoppable corruption. They're robbing billions of people of trillions of dollars a year, folks.
They control the media using hot-button social issues to divide us, brother against brother, so we fight each other while they loot our sacred institutions. They make us fear too big to fail banks collapsing, but if they did, we'd suddenly recover the 8 times our income that's being siphoned away every single day. Don't give yourselves to these crooks who abuse you and enslave you, who steal your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel. Let us burn these leeches off our backs. Let us replace their corrupt systems with better systems that benefit everyone. Let us reclaim the fruits of our productivity. Let us share our prosperity. We can do this now. We are the creators, and when we come together, we have the power to create whatever future we want.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow, friendships to flourish, with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.